Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
You know who you are?
Steven is my name.
Even Steven.
Will you say something, Steven?
Steven or else me.
The following episode will contain references that may cause sudden and uncontrollable feelings of nostalgic joy and wonder. Listener discretion is advised.
For 20 years, skateboarding has been an American teenage phenomenon. But during that period, no film has integrated the excitement of skateboarding with a plot worthy of a major motion picture. No film, that is, until Gleaming the Cube.
From Steven or Else Media, this is Just Another Fanboy, the podcast with seven little dollops of mayonnaise sitting on a pillow, spaced evenly apart, always within reach. I'm your host, my name is Steven, and I am back with another of the My Other Podcast episodes, but you know what? I don't even want to have to explain what that means. Not again, but the problem is that my brain just won't allow that to happen. It won't allow me to not explain to you what a My Other Podcast episode is. So, yeah, I'll try to be as brief as I possibly can. In 2018, I started up a podcast for my Patreon, which I called My Other Podcast. After 200 some odd episodes, I rebooted the show and I started recording new episodes for a public feed. But after 15 of those, I realized that not many people were listening. For example, today's episode has only been listened to 13 times over on the My Other Podcast feed. So I'm bringing those episodes over here. This time around, we're going back to the episode that was originally posted on my Patreon on March 11th, 2022, and then to the public feed on May the 20th, also in 2022. It's episode number 3, and it's called Gleaming the Cube. And hey, there's a bit there after the theme song in which I say that I have a couple of announcements, but since those announcements are all out of date and no longer relevant, I've removed that bit. So when you get to that and something weird happens, now you'll know why. Enjoy. When I was a kid, all I ever wanted was to be a skateboarder. So my parents bought me a skateboard and I set out to learn as many tricks as I could. But you know what I realized after years and years of trying my best to learn how to skate? The hardest thing about skateboarding is the concrete. Welcome to another episode of My Other Podcast, the podcast created just for you, my patron. I'm your host. My name is Steven. And before we get started here today, I have a couple of announcements and stuff. Let's get into the meat of this episode. Today, I want to take you on a trip, a journey through time. Our destination, January 1989. Poison hit number one. With Every Rose Has Its Thorn, Cheers, Roseanne, and The Cosby Show were the top three programs on TV, and a little movie about a skateboard punk forever changed my life. All right, that's not true, but a little movie about a skateboard punk hit the theaters, and I thought it was pretty cool.
just does not sound as dramatic. So today on my other podcast, I want to talk to you about gleaming the cube.
I'm different. You checked yourself out in the mirror this morning?
It's an oversimplification. When I say different, I mean different. Brian, you gleam the cube.
Don't you just love that song? Isn't that great? I mean, it's 89. That's when this movie came out, January of 1989. And it is still, that music is still just clinging to the 80s for all it's worth. Now, I would have been 16 at the time that this movie came out. And it stars Christian Slater as Brian Kelly, who is a 16-year-old skateboarder. And he's investigating the death of his adopted Vietnamese brother. I was really into Christian Slater at the time. I don't really quite know why. I guess, you know, this was the first thing I think I had ever seen him in. And then he did a movie called Pump Up the Volume, in which he also played a teenager who started a pirate radio station. And that really did kind of affect me to a certain extent, because I remember walking out of the theater after watching Pump Up the Volume and just thinking, I have to do a pirate radio station. I never did, of course. I was, like I said, I might have graduated from high school at that point. But anyway, here we are now. I'm podcasting, so I guess that's kind of the same thing, right? Anyway, this movie was directed by a guy named Graham Clifford, who, if you don't recognize the name, that's okay. He did go on to direct a big bunch of TV movies that I have never heard of. Tony Hawk, famous skater, Tony Hawk, he's in the film as one of Brian's skater friends, Buddy. And Christian Jacobs, the MC Bat Commander from the Aquabats, is also in the film. And he plays another of Brian's skater friends named Gremick. Not sure what that name signifies, Gremick. Anyway, the film has four taglines, and I wanted to give you all four taglines. The first one is, "They've broken Brian's world apart. Now it's time to even the score." The second one is, "They've smashed Brian's life. Now he's going to shatter theirs." And then number three, "When getting even means risking it all." And then number four, my favorite, "All he cared about was gleaming the cube until the night they killed his brother." Now, I played a little sample there before the song in which one of Brian's friends, Yabo, tells him that he gleams the cube. And you know what? There's a whole bunch of stuff out there online about this whole gleaming the cube thing. And it apparently comes from a question that somebody asked somebody else in Thrasher magazine or something. I don't know. It sounds like nonsense to me, but here's what I'm going to do for you guys here. I'm going to go through and I'm going to read you the synopsis of the movie as it's written here on Wikipedia. And as I'm reading it, I may break off now and again to give my thoughts, or I may just save it all up for the end. Here we go. You ready? Let's buckle in. Brian Kelly is an underachieving high school student in Orange County, California. An avid skateboarder, Brian is frequently at odds with his parents for his increasingly reckless behavior, which has landed him in jail on more than one occasion. I don't remember that coming up at the beginning of the movie. He does go to jail at one point in the movie, but I don't, maybe I just missed it completely that he has been, you know, that he's gone to jail more than once. I don't know. I completely missed that part. Anyway, to continue, the only person in the family Brian can relate to is his adopted Vietnamese brother, Vin, who works as a shipping clerk for the Vietnamese Anti-Communist Relief Fund, or VACRF, which going forward, I'm just going to call it VACRF because that's just going to be easier. This is an organization which sends medical supplies to Vietnam. When Vin discovers a suspicious inaccuracy in VACRF's shipping records, he brings it to his boss, Colonel Track, who fires Vin when he tries to investigate. This was a very dramatic part of the movie because Brian comes home and he finds Vin. They share a bedroom together. He comes home and he finds Vin in bed smoking. And Vin, it's like his life has just been destroyed. He can't stop thinking about this inaccuracy that he found. And at first, apparently, he feels, because he got fired, that he's the one who made the mistake. But as he's telling Brian what happened, he realizes, maybe I'm not the one who made a mistake. And that's where we get into the thick of things. So undeterred, Vin sneaks into Westpac Medical Supplies, the warehouse handling VACRF's shipping, but is apprehended by owner Ed Lawndale. Vin is then interrogated by Lawndale and Bobby Nguyen, another of Colonel Track's employees, at a motel. When Colonel Track arrives, it is revealed that he and Lawndale are conspirators in a scheme to smuggle illegal weapons to Vietnam. Convinced that Vin poses no threat to their operation, Track intends to set him free. But Vin is accidentally strangled to death by Nguyen. They hang Vin's body from a noose, so the police deem it a suicide. Yeah, so Bobby Nguyen, who he's I don't think he's a teenager. He might be in his 20s, maybe. They don't really give you much of an idea about that. But he, when they get to this scene, it opens with him soaking a towel in a kitchen or in a kitchen sink. Good Lord, in the motel room. And he's got it all wound up like maybe what you might do if you're going to, you know, snap somebody with a towel. And then he kind of wrings the excess water out of it. And then he just starts strangling Vin. And apparently it's a torture technique that he's done many times. And never once has anybody that he's tortured, never once have they died from this technique. But somehow he manages to kill Vin while Lawndale and Track are outside. And, you know, it's just one of those tragic things where Track is about to let the kid go, but because he's being tortured, he ends up dying. You know, maybe they should have just said, hey, why don't you just wait a minute? I'm going to go talk to Track. Don't stop torturing him. We're not interrogating him at this point. I'm going to step out of the hotel room. I'm being Lawndale at this point. So just stop torturing him. But nope, that doesn't happen. And so Vin dies. After the funeral, Brian finds the list of medical supplies Vin was investigating, written in Vietnamese. Looking for someone to translate it, he encounters Bobby Nguyen, who starts to follow him. Brian sneaks into the backseat of Nguyen's car and witnesses a meeting with Track and Lawndale, in which Nguyen demands $50,000 and a ticket to Bangkok at gunpoint. But a struggle ensues, and Lawndale kills Nguyen. Brian flees to notify the police, but they find no trace of the crime and later learn that Nguyen supposedly arrived in Thailand. Brian tries to convince Detective Al Lucero that his brother did not commit suicide. While skeptical, Lucero, who looks a bit like Jerry Seinfeld's tough older brother, offers to look into it. So this is the part of the movie where a 16-year-old boy decides he's going to investigate the murder of his adopted brother. And he does a fairly successful job at it. And, you know, as a 16-year-old watching this movie for the first time, that didn't fade. It just made sense. You know, yeah, if somebody killed my brother, I'd be out there investigating it too. I wouldn't care if the cops, what they're going to do. I'm going to do it myself and I'm going to get it done. And looking at it now as an adult, it just, I don't know, it's a little far-fetched. So continuing, suspicious of Colonel Track, Brian reaches out to Track's daughter, Tina. Let me just back up a second. Suspicious of Colonel Track is what it says. Of course he's suspicious of Colonel Track. He just watched Track and Lawndale kill Bobby Nguyen and stuff his body in the trunk of Bobby's car. So that just seems kind of silly to say suspicious of Colonel Track. Anyway, Brian reaches out to Track's daughter, Tina, a fellow high school student and Vin's ex-girlfriend. After an image makeover, Brian asks her out on a date and the two become closer. He attends one of the Vacriff's social functions where he notices Lawndale and learns of his connection to Track and Westpac. Following in his brother's footsteps, Brian sneaks into Lawndale's warehouse and uncovers a shipping crate full of weapons. All right, so as a 16-year-old boy watching this movie at the time, I really had a hard time with this part of the movie because here's what happens. They kind of gloss over it. They just say, after an image makeover. So Brian realizes that he's going to have to cozy up to Tina.
The Just Another Fanboy podcast will return after these messages. And now back to Just Another Fanboy.
Not only was she Vin's girlfriend when he died, she's also the daughter of Colonel Track, who he is pretty darn sure killed Vin. Well, she is a total preppy, and so was Vin. Brian, of course, is a skateboarder, so he does the whole ripped up jeans, earring, spiked freaking hair with highlights in it, that kind of stuff, concert t-shirts and junk like that. Fingerless glove. He's always wearing a fingerless glove. And he realizes that because he says, he buys her a Coke out of the machine at high school, at the high school. I'll get this talking thing solved at some point in my life, folks. Anyway, he buys her a Coke out of the machine at the high school and he tells her that he wants to be her friend. And she kind of laughs and she's like, we have nothing in common, Brian. And he says, well, we have Vin. And she says, look, it doesn't matter. Even if I wanted to be your friend, my father does not allow me to date or be friends with white boys. And that's when he kind of realizes that if he's going to make this work, if he's going to get close to her so that he can get close to Track, you know, Colonel Track, and maybe find out what's going on, he's going to have to completely change his image. And so he goes full prep. And it's a very funny moment because, again, as a kid, it didn't faze me that Brian goes into the bathroom shirtless, takes his earring out, takes his fingerless glove off, which seemed to be a really big deal. It was a big moment in Brian's life to take off his fingerless glove. And then he just starts cutting his own hair. And it, you know what? It turned out really well. And as a kid, again, it didn't faze me, but watching that now, really hard to imagine. Somebody cutting their own hair in the mirror and having it turn out great. Anyway, so yeah, he goes full preppy. And not only does he do that, he practically starts ignoring all of his skater friends. And, you know, watching that now as an adult, I'm watching it and I'm realizing this is what he's doing. This is what he has to do to solve the murder of his brother. He's got to become this person. It's temporary. He's basically like a cop who has gone undercover. I've always been a stupid man. We've talked about this, I'm sure, before. I'm somewhat of an idiot. Well, imagine me at 16 years old. All I could think of was how he is betraying himself and his friends by turning away from the skater lifestyle and becoming a prep. And, I guess I knew somewhat in the bottom of my heart that, he had to do this, but at the same time, I almost felt like at the time, I think, that he was doing this permanently. You know, that he wasn't going to go back to being a skater. I mean, he's riding a bike at one point, and his friends try to talk to him, and You know, at one point, Yabo is like, look, I don't know what's going on, man. I know that you blame yourself for Vin's death, but, you know, your friends, me, your friends, we think about you. We're here for you. And Brian's just like, yeah, I'm sorry. I got to go. And just kind of blows him off. So, I had a hard time with that as a kid watching that. And watching it now, it's still the whole movie's very silly, but I understood his motivation a little bit more now as a grown man. Anyway, Brian causes an explosion at the warehouse and plants evidence to incriminate Track. But Lucero immediately suspects Brian and admonishes him for the act. However, the incident causes Track to panic and send his wife and daughter away to his brother's house. A distressed Tina spends the night with Brian. Not like that. Get your head out of the gutter. They were not lovers in the nighttime. She just needed a shoulder to cry on. You people, your dirty thoughts. Wash your freaking brain out with soap. Anyway, Tina spends the night with Brian and discovers a lighter belonging to her father in Brian's room, leading Brian to explain all of his suspicions to her. See, at one point he goes and he's hanging out at her house with her. The parents aren't home. And he asks her, you know, I'm going to use the restroom. Can you show me where to tell me where it is? And so when he goes to use the restroom, he instead slips into her father's den, finds, you know, some incriminating evidence, I guess, not much, but he takes this lighter that belongs to him. And it's a funny moment, but because she's like, hey, this is my father's lighter. And he's like, no, it's not. And she goes, no, it is. Where did you get this? And he goes, I found it somewhere. It's not your father's. And she goes, some big dignitary gave it to him. And he's like, no, I got it at a pawn shop or something. And she goes, it's got his name on it. And he's like, all right. And then he tells her everything. And, so that leads her to angrily. So, all right, let me just go back to reading. Tingra does the stuff with the things. Tina angrily confronts her father about the conspiracy, who is shamed by his involvement and contacts Lawndale to end the operation. In response, Lawndale sends a group of Vietnamese motorcyclists to run Brian down on the street. The police manage to apprehend the bikers, and with the aid of an interpreter, Lucero is able to confirm Lawndale's role in the attack. That was actually a pretty cool scene. These three guys on motorcycles are chasing Brian down a very, very large and long hill. It might as well have been the side of a frickin' mountain. But Brian is just on his skateboard, and he's doing some frickin' speed skating, and it was pretty cool. Even as an adult, I enjoyed that moment. Actually, speaking of the skateboarding, we're almost done with the movie, but before I forget about this, there's a couple of things I need to say about the skateboarding that happens in the movie. We only see it a few times throughout the movie. I mean, it is kind of a big part of the end, but Brian and his gang at the beginning of the movie, they have a guy who is a pilot, and they bribe him to take them up in his little plane so they can fly over Orange County and find empty swimming pools for them to skate in. And so we see some skating there. We have this downhill race, which was pretty cool. But there's a couple of moments in the movie where, I'll use an example. In comparison, I guess I should say, if you were watching a movie that was considered a dance movie that was about dancers, the main character who is a dancer, if something happens in their life, something that, you know, like the death of a brother, and the only way, you know, that the only way that dancer is going to be able to work through those emotions is by dancing. So of course, Brian, when he finds out his brother dies, the way he works through those emotions is by skateboarding. And there's twice in the movie that he does that. It's just like, suddenly he's like, I'm very upset and emo, and I have to just go skate. And so he's by himself in some place just skating. And the tricks are pretty awesome. He, you know, the guy, whoever is playing him as the skateboarder, I have a feeling it's more than one person, but the tricks were pretty freaking awesome. They were pretty good scenes. If you're into skateboarding and skateboarding stunts, those were a couple of pretty cool scenes. I feel like there was something else I was going to say about the skateboarding, and now And now I can't think of it. Anyway, let's get back to the movie. Brian visits his friend Yabo, who builds a newer, faster skateboard for Brian and rallies the rest of the skateboarding clique. Brian and the police both converge upon Colonel Track's house, where Lawndale holds Tina at gunpoint. When Track tries to wrestle the gun away, Brian crashes into the room through the window, but Lawndale shoots and kills Track, then escapes in a police car. Brian, Lucero, and the entire skateboarding crew eventually corner Lawndale. As Lawndale prepares to shoot Brian, he soars into the air on his skateboard and knocks Lawndale out. Brian comforts Tina about her father's death and suggests that they return to school together, implying that their relationship will continue. Afterwards, Brian and Lucero visit Vin's grave before driving away. And that's the end of the movie. So this last bit here, the whole epic conclusion, the big, you know, the big fight scene, basically, the big action-packed ending. So it starts with Brian, you know, he like it says, he has Yabo build him a newer skateboard, you know, because he broke his and stuff. And then he, as Yabo's getting all of the their whole skateboarding crew together, and that it happens basically, Buddy, who is played by Tony Hawk, apparently works at the local Pizza Hut and drives a Pizza Hut truck, which is just a small pickup truck with like the red Pizza Hut roof over the top of the cab. And all of the skateboarders converge on the Pizza Hut. Buddy jumps into the cab and the rest jump into the back of the pickup truck. And then they head out to find Brian. Brian, in the meantime, goes to Colonel Track's house. He has this elaborate garden backyard thing with like a fish pond and just all this rock work and walls and stuff. And apparently it's perfect for Brian to climb up on this wall and crouch upon this wall and look into the house through the big, I don't know if they say it's a window, but if it's a window, it's a huge frickin' window. To me, it looks more like maybe it's a sliding glass door, but I guess it was a window. It's just a big window that looks out over the backyard. And yet Lawndale, Tina, and Colonel Track all in this room don't see Brian just crouched out there on the frickin' wall, even though it's in the middle of the day. This isn't a nighttime thing. And so he's crouched there. He's got some new pads and a helmet on that his mom bought him earlier in the movie. And he's holding his new skateboard. And then when Lawndale grabs Tina and puts the gun at her head and he and Track start to wrestle, Brian's like, all right, here we go. And he leaps off of the frickin' wall, skates down this little arch thing that's on the side, jumps over the frickin' fish pond, and then jumps into the air with his board and crashes into the window and manages to do nothing at all. Because in the end, all that happens, he doesn't stop anything from happening. In fact, he actually aids in Lawndale's escape because Lucero, unbeknownst to Brian, has arrived at Track's house. He's in the front. He's in the driveway. He brought he drove a police car. And so as he's going in through the front door, Brian is crashing through the rear window. And again, he doesn't do anything. He just crashes through the window, lands on the floor, and he is all in pain. And Colonel Track is shot and killed. Lawndale, with Tina at gunpoint, escapes out the now open window that has been broken open because of Brian, and is able to get around to the front of the house from the outside and get into Lucero's police car and drive away. Had he not done that, the only other way out of that room would be the doorway in which Lucero was just getting ready to walk through. So if anything, all Brian did was help Lawndale escape. And then there's this big scene where Brian is with Lucero, and then there's all the skateboard punks, and they're out, and they track down Lawndale, and there's this the epic conclusion, the big scene, the money shot or whatever you want to call it. Lawndale is standing up on this bridge or something with Tina, and he's shooting at Lucero, and from behind, Brian leaps over something with his skateboard, and Lawndale turns around and sees him like arcing through the air with his, you know, on his skateboard. And before he can shoot Brian slams into him. I had a really good time watching this movie. I have not seen this movie in, good Lord, I know I watched it a number of times, probably after it came out on video, but it's probably been 25 years since I've seen this thing. I did have a better time watching Pump Up the Volume than I did watching this. This movie didn't hold up at all in practically every way. Pump Up the Volume, on the other hand, while fashion and whatnot didn't quite hold up, I still found myself being moved during certain moments, and did not find that happening at all with Pump Up the Volume. In fact, what I found myself doing was picking up my phone a number of times and playing solitaire on my phone. That I think that in essence really speaks to how this movie affected me. So yeah, you can watch it now. It's on Amazon Prime if you've got Amazon Prime. I think somebody put a copy up on YouTube. If you want to go out on YouTube and just look for Gleaming the Cube, I think it's there. But it was fun. It was a fun movie. I think the thing that amazes me the most is learning just over the last few months that MC Bat Commander from the Aquabats was in the movie. That more than anything about this movie, it's like I wanted to watch the whole thing just so I could see every scene that the MC Bat Commander was in. And he did not disappoint at all in this movie. So there it is, folks. Gleaming the Cube, January 1989. Not really any big stars in this movie. I don't know if you would consider, I think Christian Slater had done Heathers before he did this, so he might have been somewhat of a name. I know that when the movie started, his name came up first. It was like Christian Slater, and then also appearing some name I didn't recognize. So there were people in it that I recognized. The guy who played Lawndale, I recognized him. The guy who played Bobby Nguyen, I recognized him. So I don't know what else to say, folks. So instead, I'm going to say bye-bye. And I'll leave you with more music from more music. It's the same song. It's the theme song. It's the song called Gleaming the Cube. Bye-bye.
Good job.
Bye, Dad.
Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.